Hell yeah. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. We're coming at you late night with a special late night edition of Pre-Dead Boys. Ooh, so smooth, so sexy. Uncensored, uncut, raw. Just raw dogging the microphones for this podcast. Anyway, how are you doing, Max? You're giggling a lot over there. What's wrong? Is something funny to you?
I don't know. I was hoping we would get some chaotic night energy for this episode. And I'm glad that it's been pretty chaotic so far.
I would say so.
You're drinking apple cider straight from the jug.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a little... daddy juice of my own over here.
I hate that you call it daddy juice. Like, what is it? Is it just whiskey?
Whiskey, yeah.
That's what daddy juice is. It's just whiskey.
I like calling coffee, any kind of liquor, beer. I will say daddy juice anytime I can.
It all refers to a beverage category.
So
okay. Well, whatever your daddy juice of choice is tonight, I respect your decisions there. And listen, we got to take the edge off because we had Halloween yesterday, as of the time of this recording. We had a full moon and it was just hype. It was a hype night, you know? I don't know. What did you do to spend your Halloween? Did you guys do something fun or?
I got a gyro and Hell Katrina yeah. got udon because I can't eat the food at the place she gets Chinese from. Because they put oyster sauce on everything,
mm-hmm.
which would kill me.
Shellfish.
Yeah. So I got a gyro, and then we like to play video games together sometimes. And I beat Ori and the Blind Forest, and it was very nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Congratulations on beating a beautiful game.
Thank you. What'd you do? I saw you were a scary frog for Halloween.
Yeah. My girlfriend had a beautiful... like, I guess kind of sexy devil costume going on. And she put together a bunch of snacks. She made jack-o'-lantern hand pies and we had all kinds of candy. She had this whole setup. Aww. It was wonderful. And we watched the absolute paragon of cinematic achievement in the horror genre, Anaconda, starring Jennifer Lopez, Ice Cube, and John Voight. You ever see Anaconda?
I have. That was I saw it on like sci-fi. That was a big sci-fi one.
Oh, yeah.
On like Channel 52 when I was a kid.
Yeah, fittingly, because for our out of the country listeners, the sci-fi channel in the States is like the best channel for schlocky kind of like hastily made CGI riddled movies.
And Anaconda is now. Like,
and TV shows, yes. I mean, I hear they have some kind of prestige good stuff, but I haven't watched it. I've only seen the corny stuff that they put on there, including Anaconda, which is just the peak of cheesy, like, bad 90s horror disaster movie excellence. Highly recommend it. Very silly.
I mean, the cast list sounds like a Mad Lib.
It's, yeah, Jennifer Lopez and Ice Cube. What is this, a song? No, it's a movie.
And
you
John
don't think it's
Voight.
A movie? John Voight is in it. Big surprise, he turns out to be a bad guy. Who would have guessed it? Also, Owen Wilson. Like,
is he in
what?
It?
Yeah. Yeah, he gets killed like one third of the way through the movie.
Oh, man, that's why.
He just gets coiled up by the anaconda and his ribs get broken, and then he gets dragged underwater and probably says, wow, while it's happening. So, wow. Anyway, Max, I think we're getting a little too silly. Maybe we should rein it in and talk about our topic for the evening. What do you got for us?
Hell yeah. So, you mentioned how nice Halloween was yesterday. Did you get a look at the big old blue moon?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. We had, I didn't know what the blue moon was referring to, and I'm stupid. So I went outside and I looked at it and I was like, that doesn't even look a little bit blue. And I thought it was like maybe like an atmospheric thing, and the moon was going to look blue. And that's not what it is.
False advertising.
Yeah. It's just the second blue moon, the second full moon in a month.
Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Blue moon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was nice. And the sky was really clear. And I walked the dog at like 10 and spent most of the walk looking up at the moon. And so it's appropriate, Dorian, that we're going to be talking about space today.
I tried to do a theremin, like spacey sounding sort of sound.
No,
did
I
that
got
work?
That. Yeah.
Did it evoke space?
It evoked Star Trek.
Oh, perfect. I'm going to just drench that in reverb when I run it through the editing. So it'll sound spacey, I think.
That'd be good. Well, do you have a seltzer?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I shouldn't have doubted you. So I guess let's crack into today's space topic with the official Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into the Topic moment, brought to you on my end by Kroger Cranberry Lime.
Oh, it's good. What a coinky dink.
Oh, buddy.
I'm drinking Polar Cranberry Lime.
Oh, that's fine.
Let's get into it.
I think the Kroger Cranberry Lime is second best to the lemon lime flavor they have.
Okay. So lemon lime is the best flavor. That's what you would recommend. That's, okay. Yeah. Oh, are we sipping our adult beverages now?
That's just cider you've been fermenting since last year, correct? So it's
alcoholic the way nature intended it to be. Yeehaw!
No. Dorian, are you a space fan? Like, did you grow up a space kid?
I would say so to a certain extent. More like I liked space-based fiction. I was a big Star Wars nerd as a kid. My favorite horror film to the day is Alien. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I did not Star Wars. Peg you or know that you were a Star Wars guy somehow.
Yeah.
Like the new ones? Oh, yeah. Have you seen the new ones?
I've seen every Star Wars movie, and I mean, don't give me the chance to uncork the pressurized bottle of opinions that I have on everything about Star Wars, because I just won't stop. But yeah, that was my jam, you know, traveling across planets, shooting lasers, all that shit.
Sure.
Love it. Watch The Mandalorian today. Finally caught up on that. Very excited. It's going great so far. Favorite horror film of all time is still Alien to this day. So there's something about space that I think the horror of it intrigues me. There could be anything out there. There could be aliens. There could be nothing but a desolate wasteland where humans cannot possibly survive for light years and light years. We really don't know. It's fascinating. How could you not love space, Max?
I don't know, man. I'm still mad about Dune getting pushed back. I just remembered that Dune is not coming out till next year, and now I'm mad again.
You know, I think that everything that gets delayed has the potential to be better. You know, it can be good. It could be a good thing that Dune is getting delayed, is all I'm saying. I'm very excited. Dune is my favorite book, too, just to continue the space thing. Yeah, just space shit. Yeah. Love space shit.
I was always more into, like, the hard space stuff, where, like, I just like knowing facts about the planets.
Ooh, and, like, you like the hard facts.
Yeah.
Very appropriate, like, for this late night Pre-Dead Boys. Ooh.
We both have hard beverages. well, you don't, but...
No, it's not alcoholic in the slightest, but don't let me stop you.
you know, I always wanted to go to, like, space camp and everything like that, but I never did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I still like space a lot, and like I remembered today that the last thing, like ticketed event Katrina and I went to in person before COVID was we went to the Ohio State Planetarium.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, it's like a free show and it's cool and you learn a lot of stuff about space. And I was like, hell yeah, this is tight. So
nice.
They also have like a on campus, they have a 2-scale like walking display of the planets. So you start at like High Street and Woodruff with like the sun, and then you walk like 2 miles to the ag campus for Pluto. It's kind of cool. I like it.
Huh. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, just go do it if you want. It's neat.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Anyway, that's our nerdy space stuff. And now we can nerd out more about Death in Space.
Woo!
As I'm sure you might expect, the history of like Death in Space is pretty short right now because we haven't been going to space for a super long time.
You're like, our story begins in 300 BC.
300 BC? No.
When the ancient Greeks started launching their dead dogs into space.
No, we're not going to 300. Because Yuri Gagarin, he was the first human in space. And he only got up there in 1961. So we've only been, it's only been going on for like 60 years.
Late bloomer.
Yeah. But since we are like, there's been interest in Mars and going to the moon. And this is going to release after Election Day. But Donald Trump said that he would, what did he say? He said we would like go to the moon again if we reelected him.
I don't know, bro. Presidential candidates will fucking say anything these days.
I was like, oh,
especially during election season, so we'll see.
Especially to seduce idiots like me who are just like, oh, we're gonna go to the moon.
But he said space. I'm voting for him.
But like the way that we like when we think about this now, we have to consider like pretty soon we're gonna be spending, well, maybe soon we're going to be spending long amounts of time in space. And whenever you're somewhere for a long time, there's the possibility that like someone might die. And we have to think about like what happens. Like, what do we do if somebody dies in space?
Hmm.
So let's, you know, like we always do, let's start at the beginning. So the first attempts at space flight, like you said, we're not going back. Would you say 300 BC?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going back to 300 BC. We're going to go to 2000 BCE. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Did you want me to read a definition of the word space before we start? No. No, we're pretty clear on what that means. We don't need a definition to open the episode.
No, I think we're good. And you know, there's some gray area. This guy probably didn't make it to space. But if he did, he was definitely the first person to die as a result of doing so.
Okay.
This guy that I'm going to have you read about, he was a Chinese official and his name was Wan Hu. And he lived somewhere in the period of like 2000 BCE to 1600 BCE. So like, take your pick, whatever. According to some Chinese legends, he was the first astronaut. This is based on a lot of probably not true reports. But I think it's funny anyway. So I'm going to have you read this account here.
Early in the 16th century, a government official named Wan Hu decided to take advantage of China's advanced rocket and fireworks technology to launch himself into outer space. He supposedly had a chair built with 47 rockets attached. On the day of liftoff, Wan, splendidly attired, climbed into his rocket chair and 47 servants lit the fuses and then hastily ran for cover. There was a huge explosion. When the smoke cleared, Juan and the chair were gone and was said never to have been seen again.
So maybe he did make it to space.
He almost certainly exploded.
Now, there's probably, like, no way this actually happened, of him making it to space, but he could be the first casualty of an attempt at space flight. Just kind of fun.
That checks out. Yeah, that checks out, the timeline. 16th century.
16th century BCE.
What?
Yeah, this was BC.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
We did go that far back.
Yeah.
Wow. It's filled with surprises.
Yeah, I mean, so now we'll jump to the actual 16th century and talk about more spaceflight stuff.
Yeah, the real one, not the bullshit one, yeah. BC.
Because, like, space is interesting, and people did attempt to go to space before, like, the 1900s, and sometimes they survived. Like, this story is the story of a guy named Lagari Hassan, and he supposedly made a rocket flight in 1633. He built, like, a rocket, just like a tube that had wings on it, like a little paraglider. And he filled it with either 140 or 300 pounds of gunpowder. Seems like there's a pretty significant difference there. And then, in honor of the birth of the Sultan's daughter, he launched himself from the royal palace in Istanbul, Turkey.
Hell yeah.
Now, he somehow survived this.
Okay.
Like, he made it some distance into the sky, parachuted into the ocean, swam back to shore, and then was given, like, hundreds of pounds of silver and a military title by Sultan Murad IV. So, he didn't die, but I like that for a long time, people have been, like, launching themselves into the sky in exceedingly dangerous ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Did it really not occur to all of these people that if you just full force launch someone into the sky, they're going to fall back down? Well, like, I wish we could have found Juan Hu's body, like, just known conclusively where he was, because I just imagine he was, like, fucking lost in the mountains miles away.
Oh, I think he may have just been atomized on the spot.
Yeah, that's very likely. But
that would also be very funny if he, like, made it some distance. I would like that too.
So this case that you talked about just now, the 1600 AD, that was, like, the first documented case of at least having a parachute and, like, yeah, some safety measures in place.
Yeah, like, he kind of thought about what he was doing in advance.
Okay, so we're getting smarter. Yeah. We're not killing ourselves trying to get into the space as much.
Yeah, we're learning. And in less than 400 years, we're going to be on the moon.
All right.
From this guy. Let's do it. So we're flying.
Yeah.
So now that we've got that stuff out of the way, we can talk about the real astronaut stuff. For the purposes of the rest of this podcast, we're going to define space by the Kármán line. And that's, like, the international legal boundary of space. And that begins 100 kilometers above land, which is, like, 64 miles. So, like, the U.S. Air Force says space starts, like, 30 miles above land, which is crazy. But when we're talking about, like, things NASA says, we're going to go with that 100-kilometer mark. I believe it's 64. Yeah, like 62.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like about 62 miles. Yeah. Yeah, gotcha.
So when we're looking at this 100-kilometer, 62-mile mark for space starting, how many people do you think have died in space?
I'm going to guess, I don't know, like 200.
Three.
That's it?
Yeah. And that's just kind of because of how that specific definition works.
Oh, okay. If we're including people under those 62 miles,
that's
probably a hell of a lot more.
That's when we start talking about, like, the Challenger and the Columbia, which were the two American space shuttles that exploded. But both of those technically weren't in space at the time.
Right. Airborne, but not in space.
Mm-hmm. But even counting actual space missions, like people who were on direct missions to go to space and then died, only 19 people have died. Hmm. And 14 of those were in the Columbia and Challenger explosions.
Wow. A lot fewer than I would have expected.
Right. It's like pretty safe to go to space.
Shit.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people have died on Earth preparing those missions.
Right.
But now that we're actually like going to space semi-regularly, it's pretty good. It's just when something bad happens, everyone dies, you know?
Yeah. Stakes are high.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable that like, it's, I don't know, it's just crazy to me that when you think about the history of spaceflight and how it was basically like a pissing contest between the US and the Soviets for a long time. Only three people died in space during that time. Like, we were having nerds on Earth do like pen and paper calculations about how to get to the moon, and we only lost three people. It's bonkers.
Kind of makes you wonder how much faster and more effective we could have been if we were just a little more reckless, right, Max? If we would have just risked more lives?
Yeah,
could have got it done way quicker.
If like 15 people would have died in space, we probably could have had a moon colony by now.
Yeah, but y'all were selfish and didn't want to die, blah, you know?
A blatant regard for human life. Now, the three guys who did die in space, like, had it pretty rough. And so that may have dissuaded people. But these guys were three Russian guys, three Soviets, who were on the Soyuz 11 spaceflight in June 1971. This is 2 years after we got to the moon. And I say June because they, like, were on Earth, went up into space, docked with the space station Salyut 1, and were like on the space station for 23 days. And when you think about these guys spending like 3 weeks on a space station, it's not like the nice one that we have now. This is like a Soviet space station in the 70s. So it wasn't very well constructed, is maybe a nice way to phrase it. When these cosmonauts first got there and like docked and went into the space station, they said that the air smelled very burnt and looked smoky. And so they
had
to.
That's not good.
They had to spend the whole first day replacing the ventilation system. And then they just slept in their like capsule again the first night, which is not what you want to do.
Not at all.
And this is maybe my favorite thing I learned. When you're in space, you have to use like a treadmill so that your leg muscles are still strong. Because otherwise, like, you come back and you haven't walked in 3 weeks and you, like, can't walk, you know?
Hmm. Yeah.
So they had to, like, use the treadmill on the space station. But their complaint was that every time they used the treadmill, it would cause the entire space station to shake and vibrate. Which sounds really, really scary. Like,
fucking horrifying.
You're in space, like basically in like a school bus with the seats taken out, and the whole thing is just like shaking.
That's scary as fuck. What a great reason to never work out.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that next time I go to the doctor.
I'm not running. You could destroy a space shuttle that way.
Space shuttle. Like that stuff is all scary, but like, one of the scariest things to me about this is that all of this stuff that they were doing was like automated at the time. Like, when you're in space, you are falling at the same rate that like the curvature of the Earth goes. So you're basically just falling into nothing. That's what orbiting is.
Okay.
It's like you're gotcha. Just in free fall the whole time. So, like with these guys, where they're space capsule is just kind of like a Honda Civic. Like, they can't really like pilot back to Earth. So you would just get in your capsule and like disengage. And then while you were falling back to Earth, the guys on the ground would be like doing math really quickly to figure out where you're going to land. And then they would go pick you up. Like, you didn't have a radio in your capsule. You just like basically got in like a bomb that fell from space.
God.
But like, that means that when these guys came back to Earth, their capsule landed in Kazakhstan and the Soviet scientists were going out to meet them, and nothing seemed weird at first. Like, they didn't get any radio contact because the guys didn't have a radio. You know, it was just like, yeah, they landed in the right place. These capsules also, because of how they were shielded, they could only be opened from the outside. When you fell and you landed, someone had to open the door to let you out.
Can I just... Max, I am very claustrophobic. And everything that you've said so far is like making me borderline blackout right now. This sounds absolutely heinous. I hate it. And being locked in these capsules and someone else has to come up and unlock you. Ugh. I hate it. I hate all of this. I know that's not the point of what you're trying to share here, but I just need to express to you my personal emotions. I hate this. I don't hate you. I forgive you.
I know. Okay, this may not be a good... may not be a good story for you to read then. So the Soviet officials got to the site and everything looked fine.
Because everything was fine. Everything was fine, no, right, Max?
No. It does go downhill here. Maybe this will bring you some joy. This excerpt that I'm going to have you read is from Space Safety Magazine, which is real. Like, you can go subscribe to that.
Okay. Is this about to be an ironic feature in Space Safety Magazine?
Yeah.
Well, here we go.
What did you think our topic was? What did you think we were going to talk about? What did you think was going to happen to these guys?
I know, it's death. There's always death. I know. I'm the asshole. All right, here we go. It was 2:16 a.m. Moscow time when the vehicle came to Earth. The three cosmonauts had broken the previous space endurance record of 18 days set by another Soyuz crew in 1970 and had almost doubled the U.S. Gemini 7 record. And for 3 weeks, Russia had been abuzz with the names of Georgi Dobrovolsky, Vladislav Volkov, and Viktor Patsayev. Young girls had turned Volkov into a teen idol, and their landing was accompanied by a carnival atmosphere. Officials at the Kremlin were greeted with news of catastrophe in the form of three numbers, 1-1-1. Those numbers spoke of something inescapably tragic. A system of five numbers ran from 5 down to 1 to explain a cosmonaut's health. These denoted that he was in excellent condition, 5, that he was in good condition, 4, that he had suffered injuries, 3, that the injuries were of a severe nature, 2, and that they were fatal, 1. There was one number for each member of the crew. The 1-1-1 meant all three were dead. The chair of the State Commission recalled, quote, "Outwardly, there was no damage whatsoever. Recoverers knocked on the side, but there was no response from within. On opening the hatch, they found all three men in their couches, motionless, with dark blue patches on their faces and trails of blood from their noses and ears. They removed them from the descent module. Dobrovolsky was still warm. The doctors gave artificial respiration. Based on their reports, the cause of death was suffocation." End quote. Since the craft had landed on its side, the extraction of the bodies was difficult, and attempts at resuscitation continued for some time. Yet the warmth of Dobrovolsky's corpse surely made them try even harder to save the men's lives. However, it would be determined in the subsequent investigation that an air vent had been jerked open during the separation of the orbital and descent modules, and that all three men had been dead for over half an hour. Moreover, for at least 11 minutes of this time, they had been exposed to vacuum.
Sorry, man.
No, this is fine. This is like, you know, the window got cracked and it got a little less claustrophobic, you know? So it was probably kind of relieving, actually, to just die.
I mean, the relief, I guess. So, like, humans can be exposed, from what I've seen, humans can be exposed to vacuum for, like, 3 minutes without suffering defects.
And vacuum being, like, just what space does to you. It, like, sucks out all the air and atmosphere, right? Is that,
is that
what it describes? Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to make, like, a stupid, like, I'll tell it to my ex-wife who couldn't be exposed to a Hoover vacuum for 3 minutes.
Oh, yikes.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Max from Pre-Dead Boys canceled for his sexist comments.
So you're going to be exposed to the vacuum of space for about 3 minutes without suffering, like, long-term defects, for about 5 minutes without dying. Although my ex-wife seemed like she couldn't be bothered to pick up the Hoover vacuum at all.
Boo! Shut the fuck up.
And, like, they kind of determined these numbers by taking dogs and monkeys and just putting them in a vacuum.
Oh no.
But, like, there are these reports of that, of, like, scientists, like, putting dogs in a vacuum and the dogs, like, projectile vomiting and shitting at the same time, immediately falling unconscious and, like, expanding to twice their size in, like,
Jesus,
within, like, 15 seconds. And then the vacuum ends and then the dogs are, like, fine.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus, that is scary as fuck, though.
Yeah, vacuums are super weird, dude. But, like, without fail, if you're in a vacuum, you pass out really quickly. So even though it probably took these guys, like, 5 minutes to die all the way, they probably passed out within, like, a minute or so.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. Hopefully that was a little less scary for them.
Hopefully. Had to be horrifying for that few seconds, at least.
Yeah, oh my God.
It's awful.
So this was, like, a pretty brutal discovery. But all three of these men were taken back to Moscow and they were given, like, big state funerals. And in, like, kind of an interesting twist that I didn't expect, it, like, briefly brought the world together.
Hmm.
So this is, like, 1971, height of the Cold War, and, like, Red Scare and stuff like that. But space was one of those things that, like, no matter what, you were, like, stoked on space. And if you were a civilian, it was just kind of like, well, the U.S. and the USSR, I'm keeping up on the news from both those places because it's just kind of cool. Space is, like, bigger than countries. Mm-hmm. And there was this sense of, like, global unity that came from space flight.
Hmm.
Like, people were just stoked on it. When these guys were given this big state funeral in Moscow, Richard Nixon sent over, like, a surprisingly heartfelt statement. And there was an American astronaut who was a pallbearer at the funeral. It was a big thing. Like, it was televised. Probably most surprisingly is that they were able to have an open casket funeral. And I've attached a photo of it, too.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I don't know how well you can zoom in, but all these guys, like, still look pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is, like, world-class embalming and extensive makeup jobs, but it's kind of strange that, like, for dying in space, these guys look normal.
Yeah, no obvious wounds or, you know, the bluing of the face or anything like that. They did a really good job.
Yeah.
This is very beautiful. Just the flower arrangements and what they did to send them off with a tribute, you know?
Yeah. All three of them are buried in the Kremlin Wall Necropolis. We've talked about it before, but it's just a big above-ground necropolis.
Make sure you go back and listen to the Necropolis episode of Pre-Dead Boys on predeadboys.com or your favorite podcast app or service. Thank you very much. Support our Patreon.
We're going to get some of that in later, too. Just you wait.
Ooh.
I've got an episode plug here. Now, there's definitely a few other recorded space flights that went worse, like Challenger and Columbia.
Yeah.
Which, if you don't know, they were two space shuttles that exploded.
They blew up. Killed a lot of people.
Do you remember watching the Columbia explosion in 2003?
I didn't watch it live. I saw it replayed, but I remember seeing that in the news and everything.
Okay. I did. I was like, 13, and I was stoked on space still. So I like remember sitting in front of this little like smaller boxy TV in my parents' den and watching it and just being like, oh boy. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I can only imagine that it's like, it's got to be like the feeling of watching your favorite team lose, but like multiplied by a lot.
And then they all get executed. Like,
sports would possibly be more interesting to me if that were the case, but I digress. That would be awful to see, for sure.
There's also the story of a guy named Vladimir Komarov. He was a test pilot that the Soviets set up in like a really, like, if that space station was bad, this was a terrible spaceship. Just a real piece of junk. And he only went up in it because he was best friends with Yuri Gagarin. And if he didn't do it, they were going to make Yuri Gagarin do it. And so he was like, I can't let my best friend die. So he went up in this like piece of trash rocket. And they used the changes that they made when he inevitably like smashed into Earth to make the rocket better. And that's how Yuri Gagarin actually got to space.
Huh. Wait, so Yuri went to space before him?
No, after him.
Like, oh, he was okay. The test. So, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably worse is that he did have a radio. And this is why the Soviets stopped putting radios on people's reentry capsules, is because American spy radio stations are said, this has not been confirmed, but it's been like word of mouth verified that they picked up him like cursing and screaming at Soviet scientists as he crashed.
Whoa.
As he was reentering, because he knew like this isn't working the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
So.
That's horrifying. That's crazy.
And then there's the animals. It is like fucking bonkers how many animals we have shot into space. Like, I know we rag a lot on people being like dumb when they were old timey people.
Don't lump me in with this. That was all you. Every episode you're like, old timey people were stupid. So, and I just kind of sit here like, I guess. You're the one putting together notes. You're the one saying this.
So
this is your stance.
Okay, here's another old-timey dumb person. The guys,
he's learned nothing, folks.
The guys who invented the hot air balloon, they were like really afraid of it when they made it. Because like, I mean, understandably, like if you're living in like the 1600s, you are never that high off the ground.
Yeah.
And so they were like, well, we don't know if people can survive at that height because we don't know what's up there. And so they were like, well, people live on the land, so we should get something else that lives on the land. So they just would put sheep in hot air balloons and float the hot air balloons up to see if the sheep would survive. And then they would like bring them back down and they'd be like, yeah, they're fine.
Oh, all right.
But then they thought their experiments might not be right. So they would like put like ducks and roosters and other animals that flew in the hot air balloons with the sheep, and they would just bring it back down and be like, okay, it's still fine.
Okay. Just all kinds of animals they're tossing up there to see if any of them will die.
Yeah, it's just funny because I don't know, it's like a hot air balloon, like you do that at like the fair. I wouldn't.
Right.
I just like that story of them being like, well, we might die if we go like 300 feet off the ground, so let's put a sheep in there.
Better the sheep than me. Yeah. How selfish.
I mean, what's really selfish is us sending fruit flies, spiders, monkeys, apes, dogs, cats to tortoises, mice, frogs. We just like launching like anything up into space.
There's a whole zoo up there.
I mean, basically, unfortunately. That's not wrong.
Oh my God.
So in 1947, the U.S. sent fruit flies into space. They were like the first animal in space. They went up in a capsule and then parachuted back down. And it was like, oh, they're fine. That's okay. In 1949, we sent a monkey up, but he wasn't up there high enough to reach that like 60-mile border. And so officially, the first animals in space were in 1951, which was when the USSR sent two dogs named Saigon and Dzik up into space.
Good boys.
Yeah. They just did the thing where they just went right up and then just came right back down.
All right.
And it was like, okay.
Mission success.
Mission success. We had a couple failures after that, though. You know Laika, right?
Yeah.
Like the space dog?
Yes.
So Laika was the first animal that orbited the Earth successfully. She did that in 1957. The Soviets did that to prove that you could like survive an extended period of time in a zero-G environment. But when they sent her up, they hadn't figured out how to like land a spacecraft yet. So she died.
Now, why would you do this? Why would you not have some kind of game plan for when this thing comes back? That's insane.
I don't know. Like, I guess they just put a radio on there and they were like, yep, the dog's alive. And then it was re-entering and they were like, oh, okay. We'll just turn the radio off for a little bit.
God. Poor Laika.
Poor Laika. She didn't deserve it.
Mm-mm. She was a good girl.
She's a good girl. She's very cute if you look up her picture. So that was 1957. We had two dogs orbit the Earth. In 1959, the U.S. had two monkeys, Abel and Baker, who survived and landed after a space flight that orbited the Earth.
Hell yeah.
So like,
they lived.
Yeah. The U.S. also shot a monkey into space in 1958 and intended for it to live, but it went up and then they expected it to land on like land, and instead it landed in the ocean, and NASA didn't, they hadn't figured out how to like get things out of the ocean. Like they were like, well, we didn't plan for that. So they just like let it go.
How much of the Earth is ocean?
Like 70%.
Okay. Yeah. So they didn't have a plan for if this thing landed in the vast majority of the surface of our planet. All right, the Americans are dumb as hell too. Equal opportunity. They're all idiots.
And also like really shitty to animals.
Yeah.
Like just being like, all right, monkey, I guess like, bye.
In America of all places, like what, are monkeys just a dime a dozen? Where are they getting these monkeys? I bet that there's got to be some unethical breeding of monkeys going on. Well, Abel, there's no other way.
So Abel and Baker, those two monkeys that did survive, they did keep them at like a NASA site, like they lived there until like the 80s, I think. They kept them there as pets, which is kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. It's also a little bit of a brag. It's like, look at these two monkeys who are fine and alive. They're just going to sweep that poor dead one under the rug.
I feel like it also doesn't erase like the fact that for 12 years we were just shooting animals into space and being like, maybe they can figure out how to get back down. Or like... The rockets no would plan just to like bring slam it back into Earth and be like, ugh, oh, that's fine.
Dumbasses.
Now, the first two living things to orbit the moon, this is fun, were these two tortoises. I put a picture in your note. These two tortoises were the first things to loop around the moon and make it back. And that capsule is what they did it in.
Hell yeah. Look at these two heroes. Very handsome tortoises. Love them both.
I think it's really fun because they specifically pick tortoises because they don't need a lot of water and they don't need a lot of food and they can survive for a long time. But they did put food in the zero-G environment with the tortoises. So I think it's really funny to imagine like some tortoises just floating around for like a couple weeks, maybe eating a mealworm every once in a while.
Yeah. Oh, poor Bubs. There's no way they knew what was going on enough to manipulate their bodies to catch the mealworms.
No, I have to imagine that like every once in a while they would just kind of hit a wall and bounce off and like maybe catch a worm on the way past.
Do we know if this was padded inside? I imagine it was a cushy environment because these boys are probably just getting rattled all over the place.
I would hope so. I mean, they survived, so it couldn't have been like dangerous, but
right.
I don't know.
I love too that the vessel that they traveled in looks like a, I don't know, like a Star Wars droid. It just looks real weird.
Yeah, it looks like the old timey, like when Doctor Who was first going around.
Yeah, is that the Dalek?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely gives off that vibe, kind of a foreboding machine of some sort.
Yeah. We're still shooting animals up there today.
Oh no.
They live most of the time, but we put like mice and bugs up in the International Space Station pretty often. And scientists do this because if we humans are going to spend a long time in space, we have to figure out how stuff is going to work up there. Hmm. Like, what are the physical effects on our muscles in zero G? How does reproduction and sex work in space?
Back to the late night pre-Dead Boys episode. Talking about space whoopee.
aren't whoopees the big Sasquatch looking things from Star Wars?
Whoopees?
Space whoopees. They go, ah.
Oh, a Wookiee? I hated that. I hated that joke.
NASA claims that nobody has had sex in space yet, but
claims allegedly.
At one point they did send a husband and wife team on a crew to space, and they don't do that anymore because after this husband and wife got back, reporters didn't ask anyone else on the flight any questions. They were just like, so did you guys like in space? Did you fuck? So NASA doesn't do that anymore.
Okay. So the answer was no. The husband and wife didn't. They didn't do any space fucking.
The official line is no.
Hmm. Kind of sus.
Sus.
Yeah.
But scientists also have to answer the question that's going to interest us the most. What do you do with a corpse in space?
Bold of you to assume that there is a question that I would have that I'm more interested in than did you guys pork in space? But you're right. I do want to know what happens to a corpse in space.
Yeah. So if we're going to have long-term space flights, we have to figure out what happens if there's an accident. Like, what if you're going to Mars and someone has a heart attack? What if something tragic happens on the moon and you can't make it back in time to get medical attention? These are things you don't want astronauts like having to call audibles on, you know?
Right.
What would you do? Like, you're on a mission to Mars, you're on the way there, and someone in your crew has a heart attack. What do you do?
Well, having just been certified in CPR, first, you assess the breathing.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Nice, good move.
Oh yeah, it's for my tattoo apprenticeship. So you know, had to do it.
Have I ever told you that I passed out while getting a tattoo once?
That you passed out while getting tattooed?
Yep.
No, which tattoo was that?
One of my thighs.
Huh. Just from the pain, or were you dehydrated? Or
I watched
what happened?
The needle going in, and it scared me.
That's it. That's all it took.
I hate needles, dude.
Hilarious, because you are covered in tattoos. You have more than I do.
Yep. And I've given them to myself. I just like can't really watch. It freaks me out. I've given them to other people.
Yeah, I had a couple friends say, "Oh, they heard that I was doing a tattoo apprenticeship, and they were like, oh, dude, I want the distinct honor of being tattooed by both pre-dead boys." And I was like, "Excuse me? Mac's been doing a few stick and pokes back in the day?"
Yeah, oh yeah. I tattooed my mom. But yeah, like I
what?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's crazy. But yeah, I passed out and the guy was like, I woke back up and he was like, "Are you good?" And I was like, "Yeah, we finished."
Hell yeah. All right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. What would you do if someone died in space? The heart attack thing. So what would you do?
Well, okay. Real talk. CPR would probably be difficult with no gravity and stuff. But you're probably asking just to the point of like, he's already dead.
They're dead.
There's nothing can be done.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there a desolate corner of the ship I can kind of shove him into a closet until we get back? I don't have to look at the dead body every day while we're on this mission. That would be my attempt, I guess.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, when you're in space, you have two options. You can keep it with you, or you can dump it.
As in jettison from the vessel.
Yeah.
I had not considered that.
Yeah. There's not a lot of room on those ships.
Probably gets stinky.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So NASA does have a policy on this, but they refuse to declassify it. Chris Hadfield, who's the astronaut guy who got like famous from playing Space Oddity in orbit.
Yeah.
He says that when he went up with the ISS, they had to run through a few scenarios, but he also can't like disclose what the official line is.
Hmm. I wonder why that is. Do you think it's like it would just be upsetting for the public to hear, or there's some secret process that they don't want people to interfere with?
I'm not sure, but we're going to talk about a thing NASA did do, and I'm betting that it might just be because it would freak people out. Like, if you want to keep the body, you have to store it. And, you know, the space stations are like 70 degrees, so you have to keep it somewhere where it's not going to rot. And your two real options for that are like with the food or with the human waste.
Ooh.
So that's kind of a tough look.
Right.
Just taking a dead body and like shoving it into like a big pile of like
into the toilet.
Yeah. You can also dump the body. That's kind of like being buried at sea. And it's also what happens on like Mount Everest. We've talked about that.
Yeah. It's probably a pretty quaint, possibly lovely way to send somebody off. But then you have the whole question of like, is the family cool with that? The family and friends of the deceased? Like, that's dicey moral territory.
Yeah. So because of questions like that, NASA worked with a Swedish company called Promessa to develop the body back system. And this hasn't been implemented yet, but it exists. And I guess a way to describe this would be space cremation.
Hmm.
So what you do is you take the body and you put it in like an airtight bag, super good bag, and then you put it in the airlock for like an hour.
Vacuum seal it.
Yeah. So you expose it to like space temperature, like almost absolute zero for an hour.
Hmm.
And at that point, it's like the body is frozen solid. And they have a system developed by this company where you bring it back inside the ship and a system shakes it to like break it apart and like pulverize it. So you just have like, you're just dust. And then they dehydrate it and you're left with about 50 pounds of like bone and flesh dust. So that's kind of what their plan A is right now.
Sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, right? Like, they put you in one of those like paint shakers at like Home Depot.
Just jiggle you.
Mash you up. So, I mean, that's all well and good. But when we talk about actually spending time somewhere too, like what happens if this is on a planet, the issue gets a little more complicated. Like, to get to Mars, it takes about 7 to 9 months, somewhere in there. And if you're going to touch down and do research, you're going to be there for a while, and then you have 7 to 9 months to get back. If someone dies there, you have to wrestle with that. So if you're on Mars and you're doing science, like, what's the first rule of science?
The first rule of science? I don't fucking know. There's science rules? What does that even mean?
You want to control as much as possible, you know? You want to eliminate variables.
Oh, okay. Like a controlled environment. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So if you are doing research on, like, the soil on Mars, and someone dies, and then you bury a body in that soil, you have introduced all kinds of new variables to that soil.
Right.
You know? Even if it's, like, a really small amount, you have made a change. And there's no way of telling how that change is going to affect things down the road. I found an article from Slate that puts this kind of quandary in some more scientific terms.
Paul Root Wolpe, a professor at Emory University and senior bioethicist at NASA, deals with all kinds of unexpected issues pertaining to manned space travel, including the challenges posed by death and dying in microgravity. He's not concerned with rogue bodies finding shelter on Saturn, so much as the intentional disposal of bodies on early missions to Mars. At this point in our exploration of the Red Planet, a massive amount of intensive research is being conducted to understand the planet's microbiome. Was there ever life there? And if so, what was it like? Disposing a body on Martian soil would probably introduce extraneous variables into further probes of the planet's microbial life, or lack thereof, making it very difficult to determine whether subsequent discoveries are of organisms native to the planet or introduced by way of decaying Earthlings. If humanity is serious about establishing a permanent presence on Mars, Wolpe concedes that at some point the burial of bodies and environmental contamination becomes inevitable. This, however, is a long way off, and in the interim, the disposal of bodies for the first Martians, at least human ones, raises interesting methodological questions for those planning initial missions. A radical idea is that the bodies could perhaps be used as a fertilizer for the Martians. Certain colonization models, such as those proposed by NASA and Mars One, involve Martian colonists growing their food locally rather than importing it from Earth, which would require fertile soil. But neither Mars One nor NASA has made any suggestions that the body-based fertilizer will ever be formally incorporated into mission design.
Yeah, so in short, there's this, like, tipping point where we shouldn't be putting bodies on Mars yet. At a certain point, it's probably okay, but up until a certain point, we just shouldn't do it because it could throw off our study of the planet. But at some point, if we get there, we're going to have to do it. Mars is a lot colder than Earth, so you can't really bury a body because it just wouldn't decompose. There's not a lot of oxygen, so cremation fires are out. And also, I guess they don't have trees, so you can't, like, build a coffin, start a fire like that, which was surprising to me.
No trees on Mars. Who'd have thunk?
Yeah. But we are about to have a throwback pre-Dead Boys feature who's attempting to solve that problem. Do you remember Pia Interlandi?
Yeah. Isn't she the artist that made the, it's like the burial shroud or whatever?
Yep. From episode 28, Death Fashion. Dr. Interlandi is doing work to develop one of those suits, like a green burial shroud, for Mars. This is from an article on space.com where she talks about it and what it is.
This project aims to conceptualize the process of death and grieving on Mars in a way that aligns with our human sensibilities. Here on Earth, we have funerals, memorials, wakes, cremation, burial services, and more. We have a litany of rituals surrounding death that give us an opportunity to say goodbye to our dead. For this Martian Death Project, Interlandi created a ritual death garment. Throughout the mission, the astronaut sleeps on a pillowcase. Written on the pillowcase is, "Upon my death, here is everything you need." Inside the pillowcase are all of the pieces of the death garment. Sleeping on the clothes they would wear after they die, the concept goes, would not only remind astronauts of their mortality, but also allow them to reflect in a unique way. The pillowcase would also provide a space-saving method for transporting the garment. The garment has four layers and is 100% biodegradable, so the body can decompose more easily without creating additional synthetic waste. The first layer of the garment is an undergarment, which lies directly against the body. It is a white tunic with ties on its sides. Over this base layer is the second layer, which is meant to be more decorative. This semi-translucent layer is made out of a light silk and features a gradual color fade from the top to the bottom of the garment, white to dark gray. Third, the garment features a light silk gauzy piece that wraps around and covers the face. Finally, the garment includes a large blanket-like veil made out of a very simple silk that feels and looks almost like a large, thick web. This fourth piece wraps around the body over the other garments.
I'll also put a little photo there of the shroud in action. Not actually on Mars, but this is like a volcanic site.
They made it look as close to Mars as they could.
Yeah.
Nice touch.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, you know? I like the ritual aspect of it because you are, you know, millions of miles away from home. Mm-hmm. So there is some sense of like you need to maintain some semblance of how things were back where you came from. But this garment isn't the final step of the plan because the human body has some very valuable resources in it. And sending things to space is really expensive. Whatever you have, you want to use as much as you can. And as Dr. Interlandi has been thinking about this and being like, well, this is a shroud that allows for a period of mourning, but also the Martian soil won't really decompose the body. We got to get a little creative with this. The technique that they want to use is your favorite, alkaline hydrolysis.
Oh, yeah. Water cremation.
Water cremation, yeah. So what that process does is it like basically breaks down the body into a much more helpful fertilizer, like a slurry almost, that's a lot more nutrient rich than if you would have just allowed the body to break down naturally, because you're doing it in basically like a pressure cooker, you know? So if you're going to have someone die on Mars, but you're also farming there, maybe we should, you know, make them into this nutrient-rich substance and then use that to help grow crops, because it's expensive to get anything that far. And if something happens, then might as well use it, you know?
Yeah. And so the alkaline hydrolysis could be, they could run a body through this when it is put inside the shroud.
Yeah. After a period of mourning, you know?
Yeah. So. I like that. That was kind of my primary concern, because I am an artist. I'm a creative individual, and I am drawn to Dr. Interlandi's concepts just in terms of the ritual and like what it represents and what it communicates. It's all very cool. But, you know, there's a very popular story about a mushroom burial suit that there's nothing proving that it can actually be good for the environment. We also talked about that like seed pod that you can put cremated ashes in, but it's like cremated ashes are not good for the soil. It's like the pH level is actually very bad for plant growth.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of these things that it's like the idea sounds nice, but Interlandi, I see like this, she's two for two in like considering the environmental impact of what she's designing in a way that actually jives with science and is not just kind of wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. I like that this is very functional. And if you think about it, maybe the key to colonizing Mars,
right,
to finally being able to put human life on there, is to also put some human death there and use their biological material to grow crops. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good way to bring it full circle. That kind of covers everything I prepared to talk about. I didn't include some of the stuff on the lost cosmonaut urban legends. Are you familiar with these?
No. Oh, that sounds like, is there maybe an episode's worth of stories that you could put together for a space part two?
No, it's really just creepypasta.
Oh, all right.
Just internet stories, but they're really fun to read. Basically, like, there's theories that the Soviets covered up these people, that they would just shoot into space and, like, they would drift away, but their radio transmissions could still be heard back on Earth.
Oh, okay.
But if people are still feeling a little Halloween-y, I can include links to those in the show notes on the Patreon page, which, as always, are available to everyone. You don't have to be a donor, and they're totally free. So in the show notes for this episode, I'll have a little tack at the end with some good Lost Cosmonaut creepypasta that I enjoy.
All right. So. Hell yeah. Thanks for getting that together, and thanks for putting together all this interesting spacey stuff for us today, Max.
Tonight,
hoo-hoo, on this late-night edition of Pre-Dead Boys. Saucy Pre-Dead Boys. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Sorry I'm being a creep, but we really do appreciate having you listen to our podcast that we put together. Y'all are great. We love hearing from you. If you want to reach out to us and give us any questions or comments on the podcast or anything at all, really, anything you want to say to us, why don't you talk to us? We are on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. Search for Pre-Dead Boys Podcast on Facebook and join our Facebook group, or join our Discord. Send us a message on any of those aforementioned social media outlets or emails, technologies, and we'll send you a Discord invite. Get you in there. Talk about fun stuff with our really rad community of friends and fans. If you want to support what we do on this podcast, that would be dope. We put a lot of effort into this. Max does a lot of research. I do a lot of gabbing and making weird jokes, I guess.
Editing. Good editing.
Yeah, and that's true. One of the best ways you can do that is join our Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/predeadboys, you can sign up, give us a little bit of money every month, and you get access to bonus episodes. You get access to wallpapers for your phone or desktop devices. We might include some other bonus features on there. Make sure you check that out and consider donating. But as Max mentioned earlier, make sure you check it out either way, because that's where we're going to have for free, publicly, for anyone. You don't need to sign up for an account or anything. Just go to patreon.com/predeadboys, and you can read the notes that Max put together for each of these episodes. You can take a look at some of the photos and occasionally videos that we put together for this. So make sure you go check that out. One more time, that's patreon.com/predeadboys. Whether or not you do that, we don't advertise for this podcast at all. It is spread entirely word of mouth, and I contribute a lot of our success for this award-winning show on people just being really cool and sharing their favorite episodes with a friend or posting on their personal Twitter or Facebook about this. Just share this podcast with people any way, shape, or form that you can, whether it's online or in person, or if you're going on a road trip and you want to play it in the car and make your friends and family suffer through listening to it. It's awesome. Yeah, just spread the word about our podcast. That's the best way that you can support us. We really appreciate it.
Yep.
Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com and look them up on Spotify and any streaming platform y'all can find. And that is going to do it for us. So, would you send Julep into space?
No, fuck that. She'd do so bad.
She would be very bad. I'm not worried about her safety so much as I'm worried about her like being very destructive and causing mischief.
She's like kind of bad on Earth. She's extra bad in space. And that's not true. I'm going to send you a video I took of her today where she was very good. You don't have to watch this on the air. I don't want you to do it. But it's just kind of a fun little personal thing. She's just getting very good at staying in her crate.
Ah, oh, very good girl. Yeah,
even when the door's open.
Nice. Well, maybe if she's very good on Earth, then she can have a little bit of space as a treat.
Maybe she can. Would you send your plant behind you into space?
Probably. I haven't watered that thing in like 3 weeks now, so might as well be shipped off into space at this point. Hopefully, whenever I have children, I'm going to be a better dad, real dad, than I am a plant dad. I'm a very bad plant dad. So jettison my son.
Into space.
Into space. Anyway, I'll get out of your hair. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot. Have a very sexy
stop
sensual
stop it
no too sexy
too sexy bad? Too sexy.
All right, have a plain fucking flaccid night.
Oh yeah, that's doing it for me.
Good night.